You are listening to the 2023 Road to Comrades series of the Stimulate Run podcast, hosted by Erwin. Wayne, Katrina and Murray share their lead up to the ultimate human race. Questions can be directed via our socials, and we would love you to show your support by leaving a rating and review.
Of Road to Comrades 2023. We have a big agenda, jam-packed, a few discussion points to touch on. We're going to go through qualifying, which might be a bit of a rabbit hole. We'll go through what each of the panel have been up to in February and how they're sitting going into March. I think off-air we're saying it is 15 weeks from Sunday till Comrades Race Day. So yeah, a bit to unpack how people chose their race goals, or if they went to somebody for some advice, how that person came to the runner's race goals. So a bit of conversation, I think, we'll start from some of these points. But welcome, Murray, Katrina, and Wayne.
Hey.
Hey, Erwin.
So we will go around the grounds. Murray, do you want to start us off by telling us what you've been up to and how February treated you?
Sure. Thanks, Erwin. I think back over the last month, I think I said in the previous podcast, the thing that was preoccupying me most was just building up the volume of running that I was doing. And I've been building up my mileage each week to about between 75 and 80 per week for the last month. Partly through running with the comrades group, the C team in the hills every Saturday morning, which has been great. I think the main change that I've made, though, is although I was steadily building up my mileage each week, I was still feeling a bit lost about my overall training and what I should be doing. So I've asked Tina Ingraham, who you know well, Erwin, to help coach me for Comrades, which is not something I've done before. And I found that really helpful because she's put a program together for me for the next 4 weeks. And just given me a better sense of structure and some sort of security that I'm on the right path. So roughly 80 Ks a week, a sort of mix of the long run on Saturday with the C team, following up that with a run on the Sunday, track session in the week, which is sort of established for me. I've been doing it for a while. Another midweek longish run, some hill reps also in the week in Kings Park. So for me, the main focus has been just building up the mileage, getting comfortable with that. And I actually have to say, I did feel a bit daunted by that at first, but I'm actually enjoying it. I'm enjoying getting out for a run at the moment 6 days of the week. I'm enjoying doing that with a bit of variation too. So it's not the same run every time. It's always something a bit different. And I'm finding it more comfortable than I thought I would. And I do feel sort of more secure in my progress now that I can look forward and know what I'm doing for the next few weeks instead of thinking that I'm making it up as I go along. So that's really helpful. So I've been also, you know, watching the Coach Perry webinars, which I can really recommend. There was a special one on for novice runners for the Comrades this week, which was really helpful, and some of the resources that he makes available. So I think last podcast, I was feeling quite daunted and a bit out of my depth. I'm starting to feel a bit more confident and excited now about the journey. Still not quite at the Wayne levels of excitement that he was conveying last week, but, you know, definitely on the up. So, yeah, enjoying it at the moment and really looking forward to the further training and Comrades itself.
Good, like, because I think one of the points we'll speak about as we go in the episode is where do you want to be in April? And, you know, right now, you shouldn't be anywhere close to the fire. And you kind of, you're now building that base, right? You're building your Comrades training base. So then once you flick the switch on proper Comrades training, you're good to go. And I'm so happy that you now have the structure around it, which you had semi anyway, but it's almost giving you a bit more flexibility just to worry about running. You, like you said, you don't have to sit there every Sunday and go, what am I doing this week? It's now there on the fridge for you to tick off, tick off, tick off.
And I think, sorry, Erwin, just what I should have mentioned too is that Tina's actually running Comrades this year too.
Yeah.
So it's very helpful talking to someone who's, her goals are a bit more ambitious than mine, but still someone who's on at least an analogous path to the same event.
Yeah, and has a idea or been there, done that, yeah, of what they're talking about, right? Like, because it's very easy to and again, we'll get to it later in the episode, but where you got your advice or who you're getting it from. So it's very realistic that you put full trust in the system to just go and you just run. Really happy to hear that you put some structure in. And I think I already said to her that you're going to be the most compliant runner on the team. So, I think you would be a dollar one to achieve the compliance goal.
I'm very independent. I'm not a very needy runner. I just need a structure and I get on with it.
Yeah. Yeah, cool.
Murray, that sounds like a very compliant someone. Awesome.
Doesn't seem like anybody's got any questions for you. Everyone's just happy for you. Katrina, should we go to you?
Yes, mine is going to be short and sweet this week, Erwin, or this month. I managed to get COVID for the first time in 3 years, about maybe 2 weeks into the month. And that obviously set me back quite a bit. You recall last month I said I was going to run the Tarawera. I think actually I mentioned 100 miles on the podcast, but I did change it to 100K. So I was planning to run the 100K down in Rotorua, and the race was on Saturday, tested on Thursday before, and saw the two lines on the test. So certainly had to rethink. And although it was a difficult decision, I think I made the right choice to pull out of the race and just to recover and rest. Took a few days easy. To be fair, I actually don't think it set me back too much. I probably took 3 days off completely and then just went for hikes and a few gentle jogs. I was traveling anyway with work, so it was actually convenient to take an easy week following that. And then this week kind of got back into it a bit and felt great. Now I did decide this week not to do any specific tempo session or any specific interval session, because I did want to just continue to let myself recover gently. And I felt I've probably missed a couple of weeks of the base, so I'll maybe focus on just building the base again for last week and this coming week. But this coming week I'll add in a little bit more tempo type work so that I'm stressing my body without overdoing it and making sure that I can handle the load when I get back into proper full build again. And refocus on what my goals were to focus on for the previous month, which will continue to be strength and hills. And I did actually one thing I did change, actually following your advice, Wayne, I decided that I would include some bounding in my hill reps, but I only got to do it for 1 week because I got sick after that. So, but I know what you said. Like, I actually found it really interesting when I tried the advice, because there's a huge difference between bounding up a hill and just running up a hill, and it is much, much more difficult. So thank you for that.
You're welcome.
I will try and continue. So I'd be grateful at the time. And even though I actually only did it once, to be fair, so I'm sure I didn't have a big impact yet, but I did feel like I was almost stronger the next time I was running up a hill, was running and it was a hill. So I can see that it's definitely going to be beneficial, so I'm very excited to continue that.
Awesome.
can I clarify, bounding, is that running faster or running in a different way?
No, well, I mean, Wayne is probably the best person to answer, but what I understood from it is not running faster, but running with more almost more definition. So you're actually pushing yourself off the ground, like you're springing off the ground rather than just trying to turn your legs over to get up the hill. You're taking control of the hill and you're really forcefully, pushing off when you're leaving the ground. And then think I'm probably not explaining this very well, but that's my sense of it was that I was really trying to spring off and actually spring up the hill as opposed to run up the hill.
I think we're going to need a demo of it, because the amount of questions I got about this bounding after episode one I think the requests would be through the roof. So next time I see you in person, Wayne, we're going to have to capture some footage. And I think definitely it's going to be out there.
No, it's an awesome, I mean, and you're onto it, Katrina, because when I was first introduced to bounding, or what we call springing and bounding, Don Wallace introduced me to it. And we talk like this regularly through FaceTime chats. But yeah, we met him, found a hill, and he taught me, we practically did it. But I was bugging. I couldn't finish the session because he wanted to prove to me where the strength needs to be. And obviously it wasn't quite there. So it took me a number of weeks, but I swear by it because I've done it. And my teammates that I train with do the exact same thing. And it's a progression. It takes time. But like anything, Murray, to your point, and Katrina was onto it, it's about springing and basically getting off and plyometrically getting off the legs and almost like hopping up the hill, exaggerating. It's not too bad in the first 20, 50 meters, but the next 100 meters or so becomes a bit of a challenge. But essentially what you're doing is you're developing the strength and obviously forcing the body into, you've obviously got to try and hold the form. And that's why over time that improves. But certainly it's a strength-based exercise, which I'm still doing right now, and I'll get into that. But Katrina, I have a question for you because I obviously didn't know you had COVID, but I'm sure many people want to know is post, obviously you've had it now and you know, how have you pulled up since having it? And because like Erwin, we chatted off air, many different people respond differently to actually being infected. So yeah, how did you pull up and what sort of symptoms were you displaying and how's the body recovering since then?
So in terms of the symptoms, if you asked me had I COVID, I would have said no, I'm just tired and a bit run down. I didn't feel like I was, I don't think I had very strong symptoms or very severe symptoms. I had 14 hours that night, which I didn't think was possible. And I'm just grateful that I had the time that I could actually sleep for that window. And I woke up the following day, following the 14 hour sleep, I felt remarkably better. I felt like I could go and run, but I didn't because I knew I shouldn't. And I gave myself a couple of days off completely, but then started hiking and jogging. Just for shorter time after maybe 3 days off, I think. And I put up pretty well. I recovered quickly. I think I probably recovered faster than I would have had I had a cold or a chest infection. So that was last week. Then this week I went for, a couple of more decent runs. And like one of the runs I actually ended up running, I just felt great that day, and I was, even though it was just an easy run, I ended up running like pretty fast within the heart rate zones that I was aiming for. So I was quite pleasantly surprised with the recovery, and I'm pretty sure that I'm back on track now with no long term effects.
Oh, good stuff. Now, because many people, everyone reacts differently to it, and obviously, lots of different stories. It can vary from one extreme to the next. So, no, it's good to hear you pull up well. And I would have still been keen to know how you went if you did do the 100 miler, how you went.
I know.
I kept a close eye and I was, something's going on. What's going on? But no, it's good to say, like you say, blessing in disguise.
I was very tempted. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I obviously just needed the rest. The fact that I was able to sleep for that long obviously shows I needed it. I needed the break and I needed the rest. So,
but again, Erwin,
I'm pleased I did.
A key taking that we can take from Katrina's, situation with COVID, that is that she listened to the body and she obviously made a calculated decision as to which way she's going to go. Which I know, it's hard for any runner to say, "Nah, I'll call it a day." So kudos to you on a calculated decision.
Yeah, it was particularly hard because I was in the hotel in Rotorua, which was at the finish line, and it was my first UTMB event, but I had no idea the production that they put on. I mean, it's like a carnival. It's incredible, the number of various tents with all the, you know, the different brands are there supplying their wares, and even the finished tunnel or the finish line is all lined out. And I mean, it was phenomenal. I was so excited when I saw it, and then to be right beside it and to be absorbing the atmosphere and not be part of it, it was so hard. And but I have to say, it has also made me really interested and keen to do another one. So I definitely be keeping an eye out for the second half of the year to see what I can jump into.
There you go.
I think the same goes with, like, it's a good point you make, Wayne, just general sickness, you know, and when to just say, hey, lose 3 or 4 days now, it's not going to make any difference. And also a little niggle, you know, you might have a bit of glute pain right now and you're sitting there going, oh, I'll run it off, or I'll just jog and it'll come good. Well, how about just taking 4 days off? And it's not going to make a massive difference, but it's going to save you 4 weeks in April. Like, and that's when you're really going to start worrying. Right now, it's not, you're not going to catastrophize by losing 4 days, you know, but
yep.
You will start doing that around late April or May, and you go, well, this is going to be the difference. So I think, and it's easier said than done, don't get me wrong, we've all been there, but losing a bit of time now might actually pull you back, and it might be the good leash to pull you back to go, hey, you were getting a bit ahead and overdoing it, let's just take it easy, start again.
Nice.
All right, what kind of wisdom have you got from February, Wayne? You gave us some bounding in January, so.
Well, I'm still, like I said, very excited. I'm obviously on my 2 week break, so whenever I come on, I do the quality. It's always interesting because as you progress from one comrade to the next, you learn more and more and more. And obviously, when I'm in that sort of conditioning phase now, where I'm just building on strength, not really worried about too much running in terms of longer stuff and all that. So I'm not on a program yet as such. I am doing my casual everyday bread and butter. But essentially, what I've been working on is purely getting my strength where it needs to be. So if I look back just a couple of months from where I was to where I'm currently, that conditioning phase, what we call strength building. And it's really coming along absolutely better than I expected. When I compare to last, to about 6 or 8 months ago, I can feel with the advent of the strength work, I can feel the benefits now coming together in that when I, as we discussed a bit of bounding, in doing that, I seem to be floating through my bounding and floating through my springing. So really feeling that. And then obviously when I do because I'm basically cut back. I don't do any, at the moment I have no long runs in my program. Well, the program hasn't started, but essentially I just do a 1 hour run each day and I float through undulations and I can feel the incredible strength that I've developed coming together real nicely. So so it's working. To cut a long story short, it's really working. And that's what's got me, my favorite saying, like a kid in a candy store, about comrades, because I know if the base is there, and that's what I always encourage anyone that I come into contact with about comrades, is get the base right, get that foundation. We've mentioned it, you know, get it right. And when you get that right, you know, far too many people go into, because comrades training is not your normal training. And this is the obvious point that so many people miss, is that if you go into that extreme load of training without a good base, the body starts to break down. And obviously, you know, knowing me, you know, I'm a small guy, and loading that up, that's where I used to struggle. Obviously, come to that latter half of comrades, I used to always struggle because obviously that load, the body couldn't just handle it. Whereas now, it's a lot more stronger. I'm not any bigger, but certainly stronger, and that's what what we've been working on, and it's coming together so nicely. So I know confidently that going into the next my program, which is basically a 12-week program, going into that program, I know I'll be able to handle everything that comes. So that's very exciting. What keeps me motivated? I enjoy, sorry, I know I'm rambling on, but I enjoy following races. Like you said, there was Tarawera. Every time I'm on break, especially. And this week I've got, because I'm in touch with my teammates back in South Africa, and I've got one training partner this end, Ben. So this weekend's the Osaka Marathon, and Ben and I have been on the same sort of program for the last year or so. We've been training together, so he's racing out there, so I'm really keen to see how he goes, because when I see him improve, you know, I know I'm also, it gives me confidence because we're doing the same thing, so very, very exciting. And then obviously this week is Nedbank Runified, the 50k attempt at breaking the world record, and just some inside info, because I've been in touch with the team back in South Africa. The guys are really strong and focused on some incredible times. So all I can say is, without saying too much, is that we should see some incredible times coming out this weekend from the lads in South Africa. So that's males and females, so both sectors. So they're very, very keen on putting it on display. That's where I am at the moment. And I certainly can't wait. I know, like I've said to everyone, is that, get that base right. We've spoken about that, but the important stuff is to come. So we know going into March, I obviously start proper training, comrades training come March. And that's what's got me so excited, is that knowing that the strength base is there now, I know I can handle the load that's to come. So I certainly I head back to work, but I get that program starting mid-March is when I start. So that will be that 12 weeks that will take me up to comrades. Guys have said, it's 105 days if you haven't noticed, to comrades, which is just over 15 weeks. So we're getting we're just about there. There's many amongst a few of my teammates, and a few of them, they always throw it in and say, oh, just be careful. Just don't go on the other side. The other side is the side, the meaty side that's to come. So that's what I say to anyone who's listening, is that obviously if you feel you're perhaps listening to this and now putting in a bit too much, just take a bit of a break before you start your real stuff. And I know that's opening up a can of worms, but it's important that you get it right and that you peak right. So that's where I am with not going into too much detail. Super excited about the strength base that's coming along. And can't wait to get into it.
When you say you're going back to, you'll go back to work for 2 weeks, do you train during that 2 week period?
So what it is, Katrina, I don't have a normal, when I say normal, my work, obviously I work for 2 weeks and I come back. So, and where I work is, as the listeners would know, is flat as a pancake. We don't have any hills, that sort of thing. So all I do is when I head back to work, I still run every day, but it's not on the program. So it's just maintenance. It's just basically ticking the legs over to make sure, that I don't lose any of that fitness, which is key. So obviously, that's purely what it is. And then the 2 weeks that I come home, Katrina, is when we get down to business. That's where, I join a training partner that I've spoken about. And that's where we're on the program and we get going. Obviously, I'm very limited with what I can do, in terms of ensuring that I get bang on to where I need to be, which is why I'm working. It's not finalized, but I'm working on taking a bit of a break before comrades, just to get into the meat of things. Essentially, to answer your question, is pure maintenance.
But it's also 36 degrees and 98% humidity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're still benefiting from it. And I find it interesting because it just fascinates me how sometimes very different training programs can result in like very similar, you know, like outcomes in races. And this, you know, this plan that you have obviously means you probably do two very intense weeks followed by 2 weeks of kind of less kind of almost recovery, or, you know, kind of, as you call it, just maintenance, which then probably prepares you for the ability to really stress the body for the 2 weeks. So actually, you know, it could be the winning formula in a way, because a lot of people work on a three hard weeks, one easy week formula. So two and two, with, you know, probably a bit more quality in the two and a bit less in the other two. I think yes, it's an interesting, yeah.
And that's why what you touched on is so important, is because it's not, you know, in a normal, a normal world, or like a 9-to-5 sort of job, yeah, you'd get, you know, structured programs and things that will, you know, obviously that look good on paper. So if I showed you my program, and that's why I say, Katrina, is that a lot of people look at me and say, how do you get this to work? And that's why I said it's so important that you do what works for you and find out what works for you. But remember, we all are going to be at the same start line and we're going to the same finish line. So it's important that we find a formula that gets us to that finish line and obviously gets us there in a strong vein, but obviously also, you know, with whatever situation you have, you got to look after what's between the ears and get yourself mentally focused. It doesn't matter, like Erwin said, the conditions that are faced with out there, Katrina, are also brutal, because, you know, we have constant 90% humidity. So I leave when I go for an hour's run, I come back, I'm dripping wet. It's just insane conditions. And I don't even put a heart rate monitor on, because it just, you can feel the work that's going on there.
Through the roof.
Absolutely, you've got to deal the cards, you know, you dealt with them and essentially take it on. So,
but then you're doing a 12-hour shift of work too.
That's correct.
And whereas when you're at home, you're probably getting 12 hours sleep and going for a 2-hour run. So, like, in a way, you're actually compensating one with the other in a month. And it comes back to that word we used last episode, stimulus, right? I think, like what Katrina's saying, is you're getting 2 weeks of hardcore stimulus running wise, and then you're getting 2 weeks of hardcore stimulus. Like, going to work is actually under fatigue from life, but less from the running side. So in a month, it probably balances out to your normal everyday 9-to-5 at home, right?
Yes, no, absolutely. Because like I said, it's just about putting those scales in balance. So, like my training partner, if you look at it, he stays, if you look at his mileage, just, I keep saying, how do you do it? But over a 4 week period, his mileage is, you know, it's almost double what I do. But, you know, we have a similar outcome, if I could have put it that way. Which just shows you there's many ways to achieve a result, many ways to achieve it. So it doesn't matter, to take in conclusion to all of it, is that no matter what your situation is, you've got to find something that works for you. You know, don't say, you know, I know they say it's good to have X amount of mileage that you've got to put in. Or in my opinion, it's very important to get the whole balance right, everything right. Get the strength-based focus, you know, focus on strength-based training, which is something that's needed for comrades. And that's why if ever I had to coach, that would be my driving force, is strength.
When you talk about strength, I mean, we've touched on bounding already. And you mean other than that, gym work or other types of running?
So to put an example is that when I'm at work, what I will do is, obviously, I do my 1 hour daily runs, but also I spend a lot more time in the gym at work, because it's air conditioned one, but also that's where I can work on my solid, you know, strength based training, Murray, which is obviously weighted stuff, and resistant stuff, working, you know, doing quality gym sessions. So that's something that I capitalize on more so when I'm at work. So yeah, that forms part of that, which is key. Obviously, you know, when I come home, that's when I what I try and gain from when I'm at work and being in the gym is obviously when I come back, I can say, oh, yep, I'm definitely stronger there. I can feel what needs attention, and then I focus that attention on there. So yeah, definitely spend a lot more time in the gym.
Yeah, and I think like we were talking off air before, and I was saying even in this last 10-week block, I've found I've been going quite hard on the functional gym stuff, and I've had a history of being able to go heavy with it. And since I've really incorporated that back in, I've found my running has been unbelievable. I just feel less movement through the middle. And even talking to a few people, the less you move through your trunk, the more economical you are, right? So yep. Even just by incorporating that in into your, and obviously go and get the advice to do it, like don't walk into the gym tomorrow and start deadlifting 150 kilo, because that's often the mistake that people make and then they can't run for 3 weeks. But it is certain that they relate, and you keep running so much will only get you so far, and then eventually it'll plateau. But if you incorporate that strength into your running, even drop a running session to incorporate a strength day in, will make massive leaps and bounds, especially to a race like this, which is going to throw every variable in. But I think, Wayne, not to harp on what you were talking about, but I'd love to use it as a segue to move into one of our topics.
Absolutely.
And that's the danger of comparing. Mm-hmm. Now, I know you've mentioned in the past, like not putting a lot of your stuff on Strava, because there's often this comparison, oh, Wayne's gone out and done 180K a week, so I should, but I'm a 4-hour 50 marathoner, you know, like, and I think you see it so much, specifically with a race like Comrades, where people go, oh, they did 40Ks today, I did 20. Oh, next week I'm going to do 40 because I should be doing that because we're doing the same race. And it is, yeah, it's so rife, right? I think like that's not even generalizing. Conversations, it's like, oh, what are you doing? And I think one of the things I've kind of realized is ask yourself the question, where do you want to be in April? Like if you are flying right now, that's great. But like you guys mentioned, 105 days away, where do you want to be in April when the whips are starting to crack and you are doing an Easter 100 or you're doing a big weekend and you're in peak Comrades training? If you're there now, then it's probably time to go, hey, let's just have a couple of down weeks and recalibrate where we're at, right? Because I think it's such a thing where you see online coaches are put in, quotation, like, you know, giving advice and, oh, you should be doing this and big long runs. And yeah, I think it's just so common now with social media and Strava about comparing to the person next to you. And yeah, as well as open forum now, like, what do you guys put in place? Katrina, Wayne, probably very different to Murray. Like, you know, you guys are comparing to what your competitors are doing. Murray probably comparing to what a bracket of people are doing. And, you know, it's probably very different comparisons, but how do you almost isolate yourself away from that? And maybe I'll give one more bit of context. Yeah, go on.
I have a quote for you. I think Theodore Roosevelt said comparison is the thief of joy. Because this is actually a life lesson, isn't it? Because it applies in all sorts of areas of life. For those of us who are parents, it's probably something we discuss with our children too, the dangers of comparison to others. For the running point though, I think you're absolutely right. For me, I tend to look at people who run roughly my times, people I run with, I train with, and they're the people I'm comparing myself to, although not in a competitive sense so much, because I would tend to have my own goals relating to time, but just for indicators of what I should be doing. On the comrade specific point, again, Coach Parry, I think, is quite good on this. If you listen to his webinars, he will talk about what people's qualifying times are and then say something about the sort of training they should be doing per week for certain goals and certain outcomes. And he emphasizes that quite a lot. And I think that's quite useful because it allows runners to see, you know, if they just want to finish the comrades in under 12 hours, what sort of weekly mileage they should be doing. And then he will put up, you know, what the elites are doing too, just so they can see, the runners can see the difference. And that creates, I think, a useful field of comparison for runners. But I agree. Yeah. I think Strava drives a lot of pathologies on the running scene. And I think for many people, it's great. I actually like Strava, but that's partly because I don't worry very much about what people think about what I'm doing. But I do see some runners, for example, if they think their run hasn't gone well, not posting it on Strava because they don't want people to judge them. And a lot of kind of, I suppose it drives sort of envious behaviors too, where people are judging one another's runs on Strava instead of seeing it just as a way of sharing something which should, you know, overall bring us happiness, I suppose.
Well, it's such an interesting thing for me because Katrina's just shaking her head whenever she hears about the stuff. But like, I sit there and I go like, okay, we call it an individual sport. A lot of the times we do things as a team, right? But what you went out, what was your goal when you went out on a Sunday? Like, did you go out to run your long run by pace, or did you go out to do your long run by feel? And it is so variable between even three people who are going to do the same long run. And you often find the bigger the group, the harder it is to actually accommodate to everybody, because you might have a 2:30 marathon in your group. You might have a 4-hour marathon in your group. So now the 2:30 guy is laughing away, joking, cruising. But the 4-hour marathon runner is, you know, he's doing a threshold for 3 hours of the long run. And it really intrigues, well, something I'd love for people to do. I wish you could have all the listeners in one room and almost go have a show of hands of who goes out and does their long run and feels 7 out of 10 of effort for their long run. Maybe like listeners, like tag us in on Strava if you want to, on, you know, if you did a long run by feel, just give it a go in a week. But I put some times down as some context. Like if you're a 4-hour marathoner, that is, what pace is that? That's 5:39 per K, right? On average over the marathon. So if you're doing your long run at 6 minutes a K, like, would you call yourself the anomaly to effort? Like, I would have thought you went too hard on that long run, right? Really, 20 seconds between your long run pace and your marathon pace, it doesn't seem very accurate. And then a 3-hour marathon runner, that's 4:16-ish. So if you're doing your long run at 4:30 to 4:40, again, ask yourself, are you the anomaly, or did you go too hard on that long run? Sub 4, what else did I have? A 3:30 marathoner. This is you, Murray. So you might find this interesting. That's a 4:55 average on the marathon. So if you're doing your long run at 4:50 to 5 minutes a K, again, are you the anomaly to the rule, or did you go a bit too hard? You know, like, those are the type of questions that we should be asking ourselves here. If you were running at 6 out of 10 for effort, then your marathon time should be a hell of a lot quicker than what it is, right? So yeah, maybe this is a good time to start asking yourself those questions of, is it really important to hang on to the 2:30 marathoner in the long run? Or should I just really sit back and sit where my effort really should be?
So I find this interesting, Erwin, because people often ask me, do I do a hard long run, or do I do tempo effort in my long run? And I actually hate the question because the answer is yes, I do. But I only do it if I haven't.
Hello?
Nobody's enjoying us here. We're having Katrina, do you want to just repeat what you said?
Oh, can you? You're not hear me? Is my,
yeah, I think you just dropped out a little bit. Just so dropped out. Go again.
Okay. Yeah, sorry. So I said I find this topic really interesting because I'm often asked if I do a hard long run or if I do tempo effort within my long run. And I don't really like the question because the answer to it is yes, but it's only if I don't have time to do a good quality interval session or tempo session during the week. And I don't think you can ask someone in isolation if they put hard effort into their long run, because it's a very dangerous question, in fact. You know, a lot of typical training plans will have a tempo effort on a Saturday followed by a long run on a Sunday. And if you're going to do a tempo effort on a Saturday and a hard long run on a Sunday, then that's probably too much or in my opinion, it would be too much for someone. But it then again, if I don't get the tempo session in on Saturday and I want to fit that into my weekend, I will incorporate it into my long run. So I think it's very much an individual thing, and it's very much depending on how your own program is structured. But like, I agree with what you're saying in terms of if you've done a tempo effort the day before, you shouldn't be running at those paces that you just said. But I think there's also benefit to doing part of your long run, incorporating those paces if you haven't done the session or the tempo session, or if you haven't gotten your interval sessions in during the week, because it's still affectingly, it's still effectively stressing the system in a similar way. What kind of, yeah, you know, mimicking race day in a, to a certain extent, because you're doing it on, you know, tired legs, or you know, you can incorporate bits of it in. But I think it's a dangerous one, and yes, I was shaking my head a lot when we were talking about Strava, purely for that reason, because people just pick, they don't follow your entire week, they look at one run and they think, oh god, I need to be doing that, but actually they don't. Like, you know, a lot of the time they don't.
Yeah, nobody's got an insight into what your plan said for you. You might have had Tuesday, Thursday, and you had Saturday as just a jog, and the plan was Sunday incorporate 20 minutes at marathon pace.
Precisely. Yeah, they don't realize that, or they don't really have time to kind of look through everything else. And I think it's dangerous because it's a comparison game then, when you're not really comparing like with like, and you're tempted to push beyond what you should be doing, and you're tempted to, you know, if you're following a program from one coach, you're tempted to question it and go, well, why do I not have these programs in my coaching or, you know, my schedule? And it's purely because the schedule is more, it's a complete picture, not just like a one day, you know, every day isn't completely different, like the coaching is looking at the entire system. So personally, I definitely don't compare. You know, not that I've fallen into the trap in the past in terms of looking at what people's programs were, but I was listening to weekly mileage. Most people were running over 100 miles a week. I was like, oh dear, well, if you want to be good, you have to run over 100 miles. And I just couldn't do it. I'd break down every time I was running over 100 miles a week. I was breaking down. So I eventually learned that that wasn't for me. But that's not to say that I don't train hard and I don't put quality into my less mileage. And you know, and achieve probably, you know, as Wayne's saying, similar results to the person that's putting in the, you know, well over 100 miles a week or very different training programs. So it does definitely come back to that point we mentioned earlier, where your training program has to be unique to suit you, to suit your circumstances, and, you know, to fit into your life effectively.
And then also ask yourself the question of, like, you fit into your life. Do you want to come to the long run where you've done your week's worth of quality, and then it's just about getting 2 hours or 3 hours in because you've done sessions in the week, or you've had a hectic week and you've actually need to swing in an extra session into the Sunday, right? Because you can't fit it in.
Exactly. Yeah. You have to. I think. Well, personally, for me, that's often the way I end up coming to my weekend. If I've been lucky enough to have a good week, I'll just have a nice, easy, lovely, relaxing, you know, 2 hours, whatever it is, and just enjoying being out there and moving. But oftentimes, I haven't had that quality during the week, so I do need to use my Sunday to achieve that as well as the longer run. So yeah, it's more of a kind of a combination session then, but it totally varies by the weekend, and you just have to adapt.
And I think, like before, like Wayne, Murray, like again, if you guys want to put into your answer, it'd be so interesting if you said to Murray, said, all right, Murray, have 20 weeks off when nobody sees what you're doing. You might wake up Sunday morning and go, oh, I've had a massive week at work, 12-hour days. I'm literally going to go jog at 6 minutes a K. And you'd be so comfortable with that, right? Because you know only you're seeing it. However, this weekend, you are now on somewhere people can see what you're doing. And you might go, oh, I don't want to come across as running very slow at 6 minutes a K. So I'm just going to absolutely bury myself. Like, that's probably comes part into the human psyche, right? Where this thought that, well, I don't want Murray to know that I've run too slow today. So, yeah.
Now, that's why the Strava topic, we've touched on it many a time, but for me simply is that you look at it over the space of time and spot on, because everyone's in Strava and they're all looking, and I know that they're looking at stuff, because if presently, if I tell people, like this week, I haven't even done 70Ks in running. So if I tell you, okay, my goal for Comrades is you know, roughly to break 6 hours, a lot of people come to me and say, well, you're running 70Ks, what's going to happen to you? And you say, hang on, let me explain it to you, you know, whereas, you know, that's where people look at things and say, what's going on? This is why, you know, going back probably 4 or 5 years ago, when I was running 200Ks, almost 200Ks a week at this time of the year, and then I had people coming up to me saying, you know, hang on, I followed what you're doing, and then I've broken down. And I go, oi, you know, that's the danger of it. But in hindsight, you know, that's how I've learned from it. I do like what Katrina said about, it was last week, and I remember her saying, oh, she doesn't like Strava for that exact same reason. Is her main reason is to stay very focused on what her plan is. And that's, for me, that's where I stick to the exact same thing, Owen, where I believe that if you stick to your goal, and all the other stuff that's, you know, around floating out there doesn't get into your psyche and into what's between your ears, you know, you obviously can stay very focused on what your goal is. And so important to keep that in mind. And like you say, I mean, this is a topic we could go on constantly. Everyone, oh, look what he's doing on Strava. Look what she's doing. You know, if I showed you my program and showed you what I've got to do during the months of, you know, coming to mid-March, right up until June, you probably fall off your chair. And that's what I said, is that's obviously stuff that's going to be designed to get me to my goal. But, you know, for me to go on, okay, this is exactly what it's going to be like, you know, that 8 out of 10 are going to say, okay, this is how to achieve it, let's go and do it. But then what's going to happen is exactly what's happened in the past. People come to me and say, oh, but I followed exactly what you were doing. And that's the point where I'd made that decision to say, oh, hang on, just sort of, you know, shield what you do put on, just to help others in that sense. And I'm more than, don't get me wrong, to all the listeners, and I've always been like that. People will come up to me when they talk to me. I've got guys who've sent me text and email saying, can you help me with this certain, you know, goal and program? I'm happy to share with you in that sense, because then I know you're very structured and focused about also not worrying about, you know, our old adage where we look on Strava and worry about what the next person's doing. So very important. That's why, again, and I think the like-mindedness that I have when I talk to other people who are on a similar goal will tell me that they stay away from Strava and social media for that reason. It's just to stay very focused on what they're doing.
Do you think though that the humans are part of the humans, I'm probably generalizing here, but we have this, and many for people that have are going back, we have this thing of, to be better, we need to do more, right? Whereas in reality, maybe we did too much last time. And hold on. Actually, by stripping back or doing more of other things, aka your strength work, and doing 2 days in the gym and 1 day less of running, might actually be more beneficial.
100%. And that's, I mean, Katrina said it. I mean, the moment she goes over 100 miles, the body lets her know. But it doesn't mean that Katrina can't win Comrades or you know, be exceptional at what she does. And it's the same for every individual. You know, it's so important that you, you know, I always say, find the recipe, find what works for you. You know, it's like when year 12 and we're studying for an exam. Gee, was I had a clown next to me that would make jokes and constantly carry on like a pork chop, but he smashed the exam, and there I am working my, you know, studying and. But he absolutely killed me in the exam, you know. It's the same thing, same principle, where we need to find the winning formula for us. And, of course, we've heard, you know, especially Lindsay, a lot of them talk about the dreaded overtraining cycle that so many people get into. Yeah, because, you know, more means more and means this is how I'm going to get to it. But more doesn't always mean more, Owen.
Well, I personally found in my first two Comrades, it was January 1 and you were Comrades mode, right? and you're building, build. And then what I found last year is, and it's a recipe that I even recommend to people and anyone who's come to me, is go like really make it in a cycle and do a, like a 12 to 14 week specific block and go January 1, you're building that base. So you might be getting half marathon ready to smash a half marathon in mid-Jan or that. And then you go, when comrade training starts, you're going to be so hungry for this thing. Because what you tend to find is come April and May, people are so sick and tired of training because they've been absolutely going nuts from 1st of January. And you almost lose the actual joy for what you're aiming up for. Like Comrades Day is almost like the Christmas day for the runner, right? So imagine now in September, if you've been hanging out for Christmas Day and you're like, oh, December seems so far away. it's very similar. So it's almost like really go, I'm going to give myself 12 weeks where I'm sacrificing the house down. And up until then, you're building up that looking forward to getting to the part where you're going to hit it hard. But I did want to give some context like from Lindsay on where you should be. Like I know Mari kind of mentioned it. And I know self-reflecting on this, I looked at it going, oh, geez, that's not a lot. That's not that much mileage. But, you know, finishes he had doing 40 to 45K a week. Bronze medalist, 50 to 55. Robert Mashali, 60 to 70. Bill Rowan, 70 to 80. Silver and Isabel Ross Kelly, 100 to 110. And that was pretty much for February. So I suppose discussion point, what do you guys think? Like, again, but as an individual, right? So not to compare with what you might see or what you might, like, what do you think, how that fits in with you? Katrina?
Yeah, so I probably... thereabouts. I'm probably around 100k a week at the moment. I feel it's a bit on the low side, but that's purely because I would like, you know, as a building base, I like to have like a little bit higher mileage. I sometimes think these, and I know I just mentioned it just briefly a short time ago. I do think it's dangerous to focus too much on the total weekly mileage and not the quality within that week. I think you can get away. Every person is so different and some people just can't cope with that high mileage. And it really depends on what your base is and what your background in running is. So if you're hoping to run Comrades as a first timer and, you know, you don't have a huge running history behind you, I would say, you know, it's more important to just make sure that you're, you know, you can use it as a guide, but don't use it as your guiding star. You know, it can inform you without, you know, making those fundamental decisions that you need. It shouldn't be your target. It should be a rough guide. That's how I would put it.
Do you think time is a better measurement? Like, I personally think time is, because numbers tend to become very arbitrary, right? Because you sit there and go, oh, I need to get 40K. So I'm just going to keep going around the car park.
Which I have done, I must admit, but I think it's much better because look, the vast majority of people that are running Comrades are also working full time. I think, you know, we discussed it earlier just in this podcast, but very much dependent on what your life involves. If you're working late, if you have a family, if you can't sleep the night before, that's all going to impact your heart rate. There's no point in getting up the next day and trying to smash a really, you know, hard speed session if you haven't slept the night before. You're just putting yourself into a hole and you're not going to benefit. So my personal preference is time and heart rate. They're the two guides that I go by, and your heart rate will never let you down because it's a much better indication of how you actually feel. And if you're getting sick, if you're overtraining, if you're not recovering, if you're just stressed with other life items, you know, your heart rate will reflect that. But your watch and your distance and your speed per kilometer won't realize that, you know, you've all this other stuff going on. So yeah, my guiding, I suppose the way I like to train is within heart rate and with time. And yes, I know roughly what distance I should be doing within that time and running at those heart rates, but I can now stop at 13.5k or 13.7k. I don't have to round it out to the 14k, which I used to do in the past.
And I think, like, it's so good to hear that from someone who is a high achiever in the sport. Like, you're effectively saying you run by effort. You know, today it might feel amazing and it's going to be quicker. Tomorrow it's going to feel average because you had a big work day and terrible sleep, whatnot. I have one question though. How do you measure your heart rate? To make, like, do you just go by watch, or it's a loaded question, but, or do you use,
I use heart rate monitor heart rate strap, cool. Because the strap is more accurate. If I'm running slowly, I'm happy enough to just use the watch because I think I can trust it. But I think if you're trying to reach that target threshold pace and you're trying to, you know, refine your effort within a couple of beats of what your, you know, your heart rate threshold is, you definitely, well, personally speaking, I think you need the strap to get an accurate measure of what that is.
Murray?
Yeah, I mean, what you just described, those different weekly mileages depending upon different goal times, fits quite well with what I've been doing. So I'd be the sort of sub 10 or, you know, if all goes well, sub 9. And I've been doing 75 to 80 kilometers a week. So it fits quite well with those different brackets. I think, though, and I mean, Lindsay Parry says this, those are rough guides, as you say. They're just indicators. And if you look at his training programs, they are time-based rather than distance-based, although with some indicators of rough pace. I mean, I've been running to time recently rather than distance. And I have to say, what I quite like about it is you actually do slow down a bit in a good way. So if you think, I've got to go out and run 10Ks and you're busy, you think, well, I'll just run it quickly and get it done. But if you've got to run an hour, then you think, well, I'm running an hour anyway, so there's no point in rushing. You know, I'll run at a more comfortable pace. And I think there's a benefit to that.
Yeah, which comes back to that long run, like by effort thing, right? Mm. If I said to you, go run for 3 hours, you're probably going to run it a lot more comfortably if it was out of 10, compared to if I said, oh, I'll go do 35K.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So, having previously just sort of thought about running in terms of kilometers, I'm discovering the benefits of thinking about running in terms of time.
Wayne?
No, I think I touched on it earlier, you know, in time. It's good to have a guide. But if you look at me personally, like I said, you know, I'm only 70 or 80 Ks a week at the moment, simply because my focus is purely on, again, that strength-based stuff. So, it's obviously, I think what Lindsay's doing, he's always been, and I know it because I've followed him for a number of years, he's always been a big, plays a big emphasis on time-based, training as such, which I agree with 100%. But it's important just to use what he's, you know, stipulated as a guide. And if you stick to that, I think you'll be standing in good stead as such. And again, it's important to I can't stress it more, you know, that stay focused on your goal and don't worry about what others are doing without sounding selfish, look after number one. So, not because Erwin, you're running 40 kilometers this Sunday means I have to run 40K this Sunday, you know. So, surprising, like each to their own in terms of where they're going. So it's very important to stay disciplined is the word that's needed. Stay disciplined and committed to the goal that you actually set for yourself.
And also be honest with the person who is writing your program. You know, they should know what your commitments in the week are. Like if you're a teacher and you've got parent interviews coming up this week every night, it's unrealistic for you to be going out after work every day. And, you know, those kind of things need to come into play. And I think a lot of runners aren't honest with themselves and also who they're going to for assistance, right? It's like, oh, I'm going to push myself to get to that and do everything in the week. But again, like we said at the start, having 1 week where things are down because you're going to have a full-on week in your private life isn't going to make a massive difference. It's actually going to be probably more of a benefit because it's a down week to absorb. So I think be pretty honest. And if you're cooked, just be like, hey, can we just cut back this week because I am absolutely fried, instead of burying yourself into that. Well, we've all been there. Like, trust me, I've been there where you're turning up on a Sunday going, oh, geez, I've got 3 hours. How on earth am I going to do this? Or 4 hours sleep? In reality, you should have just gone, hey, go do 2 hours today or an hour and a half and just go and sit under a tree with a coffee. Like, that's probably going to be better off for you, right? Wayne, should we go to another rabbit hole of qualifiers? I think for two of you guys, it won't really be a factor because you get one qualifier and then the business takes care of itself. But for majority of the field right now, people would be sitting and having discussions with themselves of A, they've got a qualifier, want to get a faster one, haven't got one, want to chase a fast one. I suppose, should we go over like what the qualifying windows are as a starter?
You could,
so roughly, yeah. So A batch, 259.59, B 319.59, C 339.59, D 359.59. Then you got your green numbers. Then you got your Fs at 419. G at 434, H at 449. So as you can see, it's pretty much like a 20-minute gap in between. What you tend to probably find is it's the runners who are on the brink of those, so within minutes either side, that want to jump to the next. And I saw something pretty interesting actually from Digger. He put some stats up of people asking about qualifiers coming up and what their recommendations are. And he asked the question back of, will 2 minutes now by jumping to a faster qualifier help you or create more issues for you on race day? Because you're now jumping to a faster batch of runner ahead of you and you potentially are actually jumping in a bit ahead of yourself. So, you know, the difference on race day between A and B, about 30 seconds maximum. Like I was in B and it took me, about that long to get over the start line. So I suppose the question for everybody here is, what are your thoughts? Murray, you've got a qualifier. I think you mentioned you're comfortable with it. Katrina, you now have one. But what are your views on runners chasing a faster qualifier just to save a few seconds on race day? I have a discussion about that and then I'll kind of give you more of a context about specific examples. Murray, do you want to kind of
give your view? So I'm in C and you know I'm quite happy there. I don't think in my case trying to run faster than 320 for an extra 2 minutes is a worthwhile enterprise. And I suppose the main thing for me would be if I was to try and run a faster marathon now, I'd have to train towards that marathon, which would perhaps distract me from my overall training towards comrades. And then also I'd have a recovery from it. So I could, you know, I'd have to run a hard marathon and then I'd have to recover, which would detract from my training. And that doesn't seem worth it for a gain of 2 minutes on the day. As I understand it, it's as you said, it's only a difference of 2 minutes. So, I suppose it might be different if you'd had a fairly disastrous marathon. You could potentially jump up from D to B, for example. You'd be in a different position then. Or perhaps if you have a marathon integrated into your program, that would also make sense to have a go at it and go up from, say, D to C or C to B or whatever it is. But in my case, it's not something I'm focused on.
Yeah. Very
good. And I should say my qualifying marathon actually was terrible because I'd been sick the week before. And I just sort of stumbled over the line into the C category and I was like, well, I've got it. So, you know, I'm not going to worry about it anymore.
Yeah, and the added fitness that you've gained in that time, you probably are naturally would fit in the seating ahead, but you'd rather see that gain come through on race day. Like, you know, for you to get to 60K and go, all right, body check, feeling great, you'd rather have that then. Like you said, then have to go through a recovery process, all because you get a better letter on your bib, right? And you know the factors that can assist you. Just get there early, stand right at the front of your current pen, and you're at the back of the one ahead of you. So, Katrina?
Well, you've just told everyone that tip now, Erwin, so.
<Barrier. laughs>
So I, look, it's a hard one for me to answer because on one hand I see the benefit of being up right up the front, but on the other hand I also see that it could be kind of detrimental to your race, and you have to look at what your overall goal is here. Ultimately at this stage is to get to June in one piece in the best condition that you can be in. You already have your qualifying marathon under your belt. I'd say just accept, personally speaking, I would say accept it, just take it as it is. And you know, there's an awful lot of benefit to be gained from actually starting a long race like Comrades slower than what your intended pace is. So while you may on one hand have to accept that you might not find a group that's going to be running at exactly your pace, it might save your race to a certain extent as well, because you, it may force you to start a little bit slower than maybe what you would be start, the pace you would be starting at if you were in a higher pen, which may, as you say, Erwin, by the time you get to the 60K mark, you may feel, well, I actually feel great here because I was controlled at the start and I can now push on and actually finish very strong. So it avoids the temptation of going out too hard with the people that are in the same category as you are going out hard. It may actually end up, you know, paying off to your benefit in the end.
And don't you, like, do you guys find it interesting? Your marathon time gets you the start location, right? But on race day, your marathon time actually doesn't mean much because you probably did a flat marathon to go as fast as you can. And now you're going into an ultra that doesn't reflect your marathon at all, whether that distance or profile. So it's quite, like, I always look back at last year where the most successful over history is D-Batch. And most D-Batch runners will get a Bill Rowan. And you'll probably look and go, how many B batch runners get a Bill Rowan? Probably way less than those in D. But it's been set up where D is the most successful and majority of them run through the field because they have done it for a long time and they get Bill Rowan. So it's quite an interesting setup overall, how the marathon doesn't reflect your comrades' time, but puts you in a mindset to run comrades fast.
Can I ask though, because I think I remember listening to an earlier podcast of yours, Erwin, with issues, especially on the down run, with runners bottlenecking at certain points in the start, fairly narrow road out of Pietermaritzburg, I think. Is that an issue in some of the seeding batches that you end up, you know, getting stuck for a while?
Look, I've been, from experience, FGH, that's where you'd be sitting there going, okay, what do I need to control as much as possible, because there will be time situations. If you're an H, for example, you could take up to 8 minutes to cross that start line, and that's where you need to be proactive on race day. So not really answering your question, but get proactive in advance of how you're going to handle losing that time at the start. There was a bottleneck in 2018. I was caught in that bottleneck where we stopped dead. However, that clears pretty quickly and you get going. And I think last year they made route changes to make that not happen. So there was a few different changes. So hopefully they continue to go through that, Murray. But I think the best advice from someone who has started in F and G is try and get as proactive as possible. And now the whole secret is out, but get there early. Start right at the front of your batch. And then you're at the back of the next one, right? And don't stop on race day. Even if you're walking, you walk forwards. Like Lindsay says the same things. If you see a mate, they're walking with you. Or if you see a family member, they walk with you. You don't stop to talk to them and lose 10 minutes. Because now if you lost 8 at the start and you're standing and talking to your mum for 10 minutes, there's 18 gone. And a lot of the times people who miss by 5 or 6 minutes, it's because of those possible reasons, right? They're already down by 8 at the start, and then they stopped and saw mum, stopped and saw the neighbor from when they were 5 years old, stopped and saw this, and they go, oh, geez, there's an hour gone because I've stopped with all these people. Those are just some of the things. If you are further back, I'd be getting really proactive on the day to be moving everything in the forward direction. Wayne?
For me personally, this is always an interesting topic, but I can give you firsthand experience on a personal level, is that when I did my first few comrades, so in all 10 comrades I've done, I've always had an A seeding. So I've always qualified in a sub 3 hour marathon. And when I look at my first few comrades, the most humbling of humbling experiences, because in your head, you think, I'm a fast guy, I'm a quick guy. And that's how you're moving for 30 to 40 Ks. They're going to drum and you're moving like that. But in that second half, when you see the other, the seeding slower than you coming past, you see B and then you see C and D, and it goes all the way down. And the people in E, F and H are with you now, and they are encouraging you. Because a part of them wants to tell you, why were you so silly to go so fast? Unfortunately, as humans, some of us have to learn the hard way. And this is the truth. And I speak from experience, where I thought, I'm a quick guy, I can smash it. But I didn't have all the ingredients to cook it up and to get the result that I needed. So it was a bad mix. So the whole point of what I'm trying to say is, run within yourself and know what you put in and where you're going. The seeding that you got, yes, that's important, but stick to your comrade's pace, because your marathon race pace and comrade's race pace, without sounding too, getting too deep into it, is totally different, two totally different things. So that's what I've learned, and which is so important to stick to that. The other thing that I can only give to people in wholeheartedly, and that's just, again, my opinion, is that if you know whatever your goal is for comrades, whatever seeding you'd like, try and qualify early. And that's why I've always done it. I've always tried, if it's comrades this year and I've just finished, I always try to, when the window opens in September, October, I try and get to it and get my qualifier out the way, because I've seen far too many people, and I've spoken to many of them, come March, April, May, they're chasing times and obviously want to get into their pens. So that's my second piece of advice, is try and get it earlier. That's always been something I've always tried to say, just get it out the way and let it be. So, yeah, this is a sticky point that we could obviously talk about on a daily basis. And we've seen it time and time again. So it's very important, and continue to hit the nail on the head. You know, sometimes it's a blessing in disguise, you know, to start, you know, a little bit. And I've always done it. Even if you look at me, even in a race, doesn't matter what race, in as much as I'll get a seating right up front, I like to start just a few meters back. Because then you watch all the rabbits go. It doesn't matter, they go. And you pull them in. So it's very important to just know your pace, stick to it, and watch it come. You know, there's the art of what I call, and I've tried to learn with age, negative split running. Negative split running is a beautiful thing. It's like falling in love. Because if you're negative split, and on that second half, you start to pull all the people in, it just, it's like you're almost out of, it's an out-of-body experience to negative split. Remember, it's not easy to do, and sorry, you know, for sounding a bit, but it's truer. If I could negative split every time I raced, I'd be in heaven. You know, that's the ultimate dream for comrades, is to negative split. I'm working on it. But essentially, I believe the art of negative split running is to start conservatively and know where you're at and nail it, you know, and that's what you want. It's like making a marriage work. If you want the marriage to work, you've got to look after it from day one, but you want to finish stronger. You know, the longer you get into marriage, sorry, Owen, I'm going another, the longer you get into marriage, the more you want to look after, and the more you want to, you know, you want to finish strong, you know, and when your wife looks at you or your husband looks at you and says, I'm still in love with you. And that's what you want in that second half of the race. When things seem to be, no, you want to still be in love and you still want to push through. And that's the greatest feeling I've had in comrades over each and every year. You know, that last up run with you, Katrina, watching you in that second half, you know, that story that we could have. If you felt in that first half the way you felt in that second half, and that's why you've got a big story. And, you know, we've all got that story. Imagine finishing strong. So it's very important. And that's what gets you hungry, is without going too deep in it, is that it's important that you learn to be disciplined, is a word I brought up again now, but be disciplined and stay true to yourself. Don't worry, because, you know, if Murray, you and I stand together and I'm going quicker, you say, no, I'm going to try and stick with Wayne, No, you're going to pay the price for trying to do that. You run your race and stick to your plan. Very important. I know I've said a lot of things there, but eat the meat and spit out the bones. Get the important parts.
So, you could be interested to know this. Actually, Wayne, how many people do you think ran negative split in comrades 2022? It's under 100 in the whole field.
Well, that wouldn't surprise me. I was just going to say, you know, less than 1% of the entire field. It
85 runners in the whole field. 85. 35 females, 50 males.
Wow. And, you know, Owen, if I could sit with a few of those people now and we asked them to tell us their story, they would tell you they had the best run of their lives, you know. And that's the point I'm trying to make, is that if you look after yourself in the beginning, look after, you know, you'll have a great run in the second half. Yeah, you watch people going, you think, I started like, you know, every year you start an A batch and you watch them go. You go, my goodness, you know, those dudes are going out at 3:10, 3:15 pace. You can't hold that for 90 kilometers. So, you know,
you
they
have
come
no
back.
Choice, though, because the reality is if you start in, work our way back, start in A, you've got anywhere from a 2:07 marathoner to a 2:59 marathoner, right? And
correct.
Then if you're standing, you've got to go, because I'm in B and I'm pushing forward and I'm coming up behind you and I'm in B. The person in C is coming up behind me. So the reality is you have no choice. And those margins, everyone in B is from a 3 to a 3:20. So, and then, you know, keep working our way back. But that's where the pressure comes, because it literally is a stampede. And if you don't go, somebody's going to push into the back of you. Like for the females, Katrina, I find it almost
it's interesting you're talking about this, because I'm having flashbacks of 2019 when, I mean, it was almost like a stampede. I can't describe how many people passed me in the first like 300 meters. I was lucky that I was on the front line of the start, and it was incredible the pace that people started off at. I mean, I almost felt like I was going backwards for the first like almost kilometer. It didn't slow down for the first kilometer. And, you know, then I felt, OK, now I can start running. And it was interesting because, of course, then you're passing all these people again, you know, as the race goes on. But you've got to remember, I mean, there's a huge amount of emotion built up in the, you know, the
adrenaline,
the final. Yeah. And, you know, they play the music they play and the, you know, just the general atmosphere. It really encourages you to want to start that. So you've almost got to fight all those, you know, all that emotion and, you know, like, you got to hold back your instincts and just, you know, stick to the plan and be disciplined. I fully agree, Wayne. Couldn't agree more.
So I'll throw one last question and we'll probably wrap it up after this. When do you start to practice? I know we spoke about pace of the long run, we move more to time. But when do you start to practice that? You know, if you're sitting there, Murray, going, okay, this is my goal, you know, round 9 or whatever it is, or if you're running silver and silver 5 minutes a K over comrades, like when would you suggest starting to get used to that feel? Because you can't just rock up on June 11 and go, oh, today we're running at 6 minutes a K, guys, for 90 kilometers. Like,
it's a good question, Erwin, because actually, like 9 hours is 6 minutes a kilometer, which sounds kind of easy, but then obviously it isn't. Otherwise, you know, lots of people would be doing it. And I have been experimenting with one slow run every week at around 6 minutes a kilometer, and it feels terribly slow, uncomfortably slow. So then I'm thinking, well, how does this actually work come comrades? And I think looking ahead, if I look at the sort of long runs that I've got lined up with the C team in Perth, like a 50K run, that kind of thing, I think that will be the time to really settle into those slower paces on the hills and see how it goes. Yeah, it's a good question, because it doesn't feel like a natural running pace. So I'm curious as to how that plays out over 90 kilometers.
Yeah. Well, the only reason why I ask, and before the other guy, like if you're a sub 3 marathoner now, you raced at 4:16 average over your marathon to get that sub 3 as a qualifier. But then now you probably, you've used the calculator, go, okay, that's a sub 7.5. I now got to go run 5 minutes a K. Like, you can't just switch that overnight, right? And yeah, so sorry, Katrina, you go.
So I mean look, I don't know, this might not be the standard answer, but I actually think that my pace for comrades isn't far off like my somewhere between my tempo pace and my jogging pace. So I actually quite enjoy it. I find it really easy to slot into it. I think that I don't worry about what pace I'm going to race at. I just worry more about the you know, just building on the strength and the endurance to be able to hold it for longer. Because, you know, it is, as Murray says, it's more so when you get to the 50K or the quite long runs that you're challenged to hold that pace. So like for me, I feel like I'm already running at that pace on a weekly basis, and I'm comfortable at it, and I know what it is. I kind of know what the feeling is. So it should, you know, theoretically be easier. I'm not going to say easy, but easier for me to find that pace on race day. And then it's all the other work and all the other training that I'm doing that's going to give me the ability to hold that pace for the 90K.
How much for you specifically, how much also is it taken out of your hands? You know, because you're sitting there going, and I think we mentioned this in the last episode, if let's say she were generalizing, she goes, you sit there and go, oh, I can't let her get too far ahead. I've got to go too.
Yeah, and that's where it just all comes down to tactics and how you feel and how your training has gone and how, you know, it's the build-up that's really going to educate that decision on the day. But, I mean, I still feel like you should stick to your own race, even though you're definitely going to be influenced by who your opposition is and what they're doing, for sure, because you can't help it. I think that you go with it if it's marginally above where you want it to be, but you're not going to go with it if it's way beyond what your current expectation of yourself is based on your training. So right now, to be perfectly honest, I don't know what my goal pace is for race day, but I do know that, you know, I'm going to be working on the endurance and the strength and the ability to hold that pace, whatever that pace may be. And that will be dictated then closer to the time by how the training has gone.
Would you prefer, I don't know, we're going real specific here, probably 3 months early, but would you prefer a more tactical race or like an out and out foot race?
A tactical race, definitely. I really enjoy the tactical race. I love it. I love that's what I actually attracts me to ultra running, because I think it is a lot of mental strategy as well as physical ability. And you can get it right and you can get it wrong. And, you know, I think that's partly the fun of ultra. It's, you know, it's the combination of the two. And for me, I do love tactical races because I just feel like it's probably a more true race than a lot of, you know, other races that you do sometimes, where it's literally almost a time trial and everyone is in the same time trial running beside each other. But ultimately, it's about the watch and the time. Comrades is very much about the tactics. And you know, as Wayne said, you can start off extremely well and come to, you know, second half of the race and just fall apart, or you can be controlled in the first half and run the negative split and run really well. But who knows? Like, you know, it's all about the tactics, and that's what makes it exciting.
Wayne, also a lot of variables for you. You are running for position, but obviously also running for yourself. How do you go about it?
So again, what I've adopted, and it's true. I mean, we've touched on the point. Dave and Murray mentioned it. You know, how do I actually? I mean, 6 minutes okay seems slow for him, but what you've got to realize is that with comrades, you know, in that first 60K on the down run, you're climbing, and then you somehow 6 minutes per K becomes a bit tough over that period. And people say, hey, why is it becoming so tough? So it's very important that, like on a personal level, I know exactly what my race pace will be. But essentially, you play with that race pace on a regular basis, and don't play with it on just plain flat surfaces, because we like to go on undulating. So putting it straight out there, like I'll do what they call a midweek long run, which will either be Wednesday or Thursday. And that's generally about between 20 and 30 Ks. And it's always close to race pace, comrades race pace, and over undulating surfaces. So I know exactly what it feels like. The body gets used to it, and that we play with it throughout the program. However, when we switch to our long runs, which not necessarily, it's not always on a Sunday, sometimes can be on a Saturday, we just mix it up, but essentially that's always a lot slower, because we concentrate then on our form and obviously working on both the inclines and the declines. So essentially that's where it's at, because we're still going to build all those little mitochondria, which is important. So the point is very important that you do get used to race pace, and don't be afraid to get to race pace as such. One other thing that I'll throw in that I learned in the last 2 years, which is very important, is in the hill repeats that we do for comrades. So when we do hill repeats, those efforts are a lot harder than race pace. That's how we work at them. So essentially, if I work the hill, whether I'm going, you know, 300, 400 meters, whatever I'm doing, I work it and I get to that top and I recover. And the aim of doing that is obviously one, develops strength. But there's another dynamic science to it. You know, essentially, when you get back onto the flats and the hills and the rolling stuff, it feels a lot easier. So that's how you approach, in my opinion, or what I've been taught, how to approach the hills. One of the questions that you did we were going to touch on, Owen, is choosing a goal pace. You know, obviously, if you become confident with doing those little midweek runs that I say at close to that race pace, you know that obviously if you recover, you know, well from those, then you know you're well within, you're right where you need to be in that sweet spot, I call it. So if you're recovering well, however, if the next day you're in pain and you're not feeling good, then you know you obviously got stuff to work on. You know, essentially with me on a personal level, it was my strength, because I always felt the quads weren't responding well to that hilly stuff and race pace stuff. Whereas now they recover beautifully, and I can go into a speed session the next day. It knows exactly, it's exactly where I need to be. So to summarize again, you know, don't be afraid to play at race pace, but essentially also, respect the fact that your long runs need to be slightly slower, in my opinion, than your race pace. Just to keep that, Katrina touched on it, it's important that you obviously get the endurance right and get the strength right. But something that's equally important is what we call speed endurance. So you want to get all that into that mix. And when you get those three cooking, man, you're basically in that, what I call, happy land, where you need to be.
Cool. Well, I think we pretty much, that's what we like about this podcast, is we touch on the subjects that people talk about on their long runs, talk about around the bar, the coffee table. It's the debates that people are having on in their groups. So I think we've just added another element to it, and probably either added more confusion or more debates for this coming Sunday. But yeah, hopefully we continue to do that. And, you know, if you're getting some enjoyment out of it, then we're kind of helping you through your build up, because it is long, right? I think everyone who's done a comrades build up, you know that it is a big build up, and then you come off a cliff. So I think we'll probably leave it there, guys. We've spent enough time together for another month. But yeah, good luck to everybody for the rest of the month. Thanks heaps for you guys for sharing your views. And it'll be less days when we come back together and less weeks. So happy training, Katrina. March will be a lot more consistent than February. But you're not behind, so don't worry. Murray, the most compliant member of the podcast. Nice work.
I'm not really sure whether that's a good thing or not, but anyway, I'll take it.
Cool. All right, guys. Thanks heaps. Episode 2 is done.